Today on Rambling About Cars, we have a beautiful Alfa Romeo. We have a crazy powerful Porsche Cayenne Turbo. We've got a massive GMC Hummer EV Earth Cruiser camper. We've got a lot of campers, actually. We've got some Dodge Charger rumors. We've got a camper cheap car challenge. We've got a lot. So let's freaking roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, across the way, Mr. Chris Bruce, just the two of us today. And it's been a busy day, my friend. You were this morning, you were like, oh, it's kind of a slow week. What are we going to talk about? And I was just like, hold my beer.
This morning, it was, as of when I got on at 7:30 this morning, it was slow. And then today exploded. Today, there's been nothing but stuff going on.
Lots happening. So, of course, there are two auto shows coming up. There's IAA Mobility, Germany and Munich this year. There's the North American International.
We gotta explain to people what that is. So it used to be the Frankfurt Motor Show.
Right.
Now it's in Munich. So you can't call it the Frankfurt Auto Show if it's in Munich. So now they call it IAA Mobility, and it is in Munich rather than Frankfurt.
It's the big German show. So we have a lot of things coming up. So we're getting hit with a lot of these earlier debuts. There was also the Caravan Salon 2023 in Germany. We know Motor One. Yes, and Motor One has a huge camper following, which is why we're talking about some of that here this evening. And by the way, for those new listeners out there, if you're joining us for the first time, wherever you're at, Motor One on YouTube, Motor One.com on Facebook, Motor One.com on X, aka Twitter. It's always going to be Twitter. You can comment. Yeah. You can join this conversation right here, right now. You can comment wherever you're at there. It comes into our little digital station here. We see your comments. We love to interact, respond. And of course, we still love our audio listeners. The audio version of Rambling About Cars goes up every Friday around 9, 10 a.m. in the morning. You can always email us, audio listeners, video watchers. You can always email us, podcast@motorone.com. Before we get going on the crux of this episode, which is Alpha, let's just give people a couple minutes to join into the room. What do you got going on, Bruce? Anything cool car related happening?
Not cool per se, but I got to give a shout out to the folks at Batteries Plus here in Hilliard, Ohio. My old Subaru, all things considered, it was their battery that came with it. So it was a 11-12 year old battery.
Oh wow.
Finally gave up the ghost. It just was not holding a charge at all. Went to the grocery store on Sunday and it just like and finally started. I'm like, okay.
It barked?
Barely. Yeah.
roof.
So went to the battery store, and what was super nice is that they had the tools on hand. So changed it right there in the parking lot, which made me happy because obviously for anyone out there, if you buy a battery, at least in the United States, they charge you a core fee, which means you have to bring your old battery back and they give you $20. But they had all the tools right there. So just swapped it out right there in the parking lot and was on my way. So super easy, you know, didn't have to take off any time from work the next day because it was all done right there in the parking lot. Just easy peasy.
Very nice. I bought a battery too. I didn't have a core though, because this is a battery for the project car that I finally wrenched on. Okay. I finally spent an afternoon after sitting in the shop out here for a little over a year, sitting outside at a friend's garage for 3 years before I bought it. Finally turned a wrench on it. I bought a battery because it needs a battery. I wanted to see if it would go, and no, it does not go. Pretty sure it's just a bad solenoid. So took the starter off, finally got the wheels off. This has been sitting for a while. So
yeah,
the wheels kind of don't roll. The backs are all right. The fronts are completely froze up. I'm hoping that I can just loosen everything up. I might have to replace the calipers.
So you think it's the calipers and not the bearings?
I'm fairly certain it's just those brakes that are just
frozen.
Cooked on there. And the previous owner did a brake upgrade, so I'll get to figure out exactly what calipers are on there. I'm pretty sure I know what it is, but unfortunately, also discovered it's way rustier than I thought. It's missing.
You posted pictures. It didn't look missing that bad.
Like, that's because there are plastic body. There's plastic body cladding over the rockers.
You posted photos of the undercarriage, and it didn't look that bad. Like
the front doesn't look too bad. I mean, where the front subframe is, there's a little bit of rise. It's not bad, but when you get along those old Tauruses, those rocker panels, they're kind of not there. So that'll be a little extra work, but I'll do it.
Okay.
I'll figure out how to weld. I'll call Alfa Romeo for some help. We'll get it done.
If older Alfa Romeos are any example, they will know lots about rust repairs over there.
I don't have any. I take that back. I do have electrical issues. Okay, that'll be for another podcast.
Okie doke. What? As you alluded to, let's jump into our first topic for tonight, and that is the new Alfa Romeo 33 Stradale, not to be confused with the old one. And I've got some stuff I want to say about the old one and the new one I think are interesting. But without further ado, here's this beautiful, beautiful car that unfortunately they're only making 33 of.
I mean, you knew it was going to look good, right? I mean, I guess there have been some ugly Alphas in the past, but I mean, we had a pretty good
track record.
And yes, I mean, in case you missed it, go to motor1.com. Our debut post is still up there. And I actually had a chance to talk with Alfa Romeo's head of North American operations, Larry Dominique. So I'll be able to share a little bit of that insight here in a little bit. In case you missed it, 620 horsepower. Oh, Seth Miersma, this is a Christmas story I've heard before. I have a few of them, don't I, Seth? I definitely have a few of them related to Taurus shows. We're talking Alphas right now, which are only slightly more reliable, probably. Alfa Romeo 33 Stradale, 620 horsepower from the twin turbo 3-liter V6, or you can get 750 horsepower in a fully electric version. Now, Alfa Romeo, they haven't shared details yet on exactly what that electric powertrain is going to entail. We do know the twin turbo V6, it's connected to an 8-speed dual clutch transmission. It's got the snazzy suspension underneath. This does share the H aluminum platform with the Maserati MC20. And when you look at it, I mean, you can see a little bit of resemblance. They're sharing the bones. They're obviously barely part of the Stellantis family here. I did ask them kind of point blank. I said, okay, because in Alfa's press announcement, there was no mention of Maserati, you know, sharing anything. And hey, this is a big Alfa effort. Totally understandable. Yeah. But I did ask point blank. I said, okay, is this like a fully Alfa effort? They said, yeah. With the understanding that, okay, we're sharing the parts that we can share, you know, with Stellantis, you know, in the Stellantis family with that platform. But obviously the body is all Alfa. We're told that engine is actually an evolution of Alfa's 2.9 liter and not the 3-liter Nettuno. But regardless of whether you go gasoline, regardless of whether you go electric, Alfa Romeo says 0 to 60 under 3 seconds, top speed 200 plus miles per hour. Bruce, as you said, they are only making 33 of them. And I can tell you right here, right now, this wasn't in the press announcement, but after talking with Larry Dominique, I can tell you production begins next June 24th, to be specific. That's the 100, it's not a coincidence. That's the 114th anniversary, I believe, of Alfa Romeo. So they're going to start production on that anniversary date. Deliveries will happen by the end of the year. They're saying December 2024. Pricing, I asked about pricing because there was no mention in their announcements, and they still didn't tell me. We've heard from some other sources over in Europe. We've heard numbers from 2.5, 2.7 million. That's unofficial. I was trying to get an official number. They kind of backed off from that because there's 33 and every single one is sold. And in fact,
exactly. So it's kind of a moot point. We've heard 2.6 million pounds and also 2.6 million euros, which, you know, obviously there's a difference in
there is a difference
there. So unclear, but it was expensive. But when you're making 33 cars that look this good, they sold every single one of them. Smith, I don't know about you. I am not the most athletic man in the world, but I would jump over a Maserati MC20 to get to one of these every day of the week if you, that meant I could own one.
I think it looks fantastic.
Gorgeous.
They did the original 33 justice.
Totally.
I think it looks great from every angle I've seen thus far. I think the interior looks great. And it's worth pointing out here too, Alfa Romeo contacted, they just kind of put feelers out as they were coming up with this thought, not even telling people exactly what this was, in contact with the various Alfa Romeo enthusiast clubs, you know, the people that they know that are really into these cars. This is coming from Larry Dominique, by the way.
And what is his position?
They were Alfa Romeo,
can you tell the folks?
What's that?
What is his position within Alfa Romeo?
Technically his position, he is the senior vice president of Alfa Romeo and Fiat, and he is the head of Alfa Romeo and Fiat in North America. He's right up there. He was saying before they even told people any real details, they were just saying, hey, we're working on some kind of special. Inundated with people wanting to get one, and according to him, it actually ramped up his inbox, his phone messages ramped up after all 33 were already spoken for, and those owners actually worked with Alfa Romeo designers and plugged in their input into what they wanted to see in these cars. 33 of them, no two will be alike. Each one is going to be bespoke. It's even down to the point where the owners can customize the last portion of the VIN to whatever number they want. The first half, obviously, you know, it's gotta be what it is, but they can choose their numbers, for the last half of that. So yeah, a lot of customization in there. It's also worth mentioning here, something else that I confirmed today. This is the last combustion powered Alfa Romeo supercar. Whether it's the last Alfa, you know, last combustion Alfa Romeo, you know, something more mainstream, that still remains to be seen. But Larry Dominique was keen to say, hey, end of 2024, we're going to be doing everything electric. 2027, you're only going to be able to buy electric from Alfa Romeo. And he's not really that concerned. He's saying the essence here is more about the passion for the vehicle, the beauty of it, the driving experience. Powertrain is almost secondary in some cases. I'm not sure if I am totally on board with that, but
yeah,
I mean, this car looks great, and I would love to drive it with the V6. I would love to drive it with the electric powertrain.
Yeah, totally. So what I was alluding to earlier is that what's fascinating to me is 33 cars sounds like a really small production run. And it is a small production run. The funny part to me is the original 33 Stradale from the late 1960s, they made 18 of those.
18.
And the funny thing is all of those were also unique. So I'm going to throw up two pictures here real quick of two different 33 Stradales just to show that off. Here's an original. This is one of the ones that has a stacked headlights, as you can see here, and a single windshield. One of the prettiest cars absolutely ever made. And then here, let me throw this on, is another 33 Stradale. And as you can see, it has dual windshield wipers and single headlights. Same model, but all of those cars that were kind of made by hand and, you know, they did their own thing with them. So of those 18 cars, there's really no two that are exactly alike. And it sounds like they're kind of, you know, it's not going to be as extreme with the different headlight and windshield wipers and stuff like that with the new one. But each owner is going to have their own unique car that they to show off. So just, damn, it's cool. Like, it's just so good looking.
It is. I mean, part of me wants to just be jaded and just be done with all of this. We're going to make like a handful of crazy expensive cars for just a few people while the rest of the population just gets by with a Ford Mustang II. I wouldn't be so unhappy with that, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
But then I see this and it's just like, I mean, this is a Halo car. We know how a Halo car functions. It's not designed to be in the hands of everybody or even a small group. This is extremely exclusive. It makes you look at it and think, I really want an Alfa Romeo. I want to be part of the Alfa Romeo experience. So you look at that and you go into a dealership and you buy a Stelvio or a Giulia or a Tonale.
Which those are three models we can't mention anymore.
That's what we got right now. I think it looks fantastic. I don't have a specific breakdown of how many are going to be V6 versus EV.
Yeah, we were talking about that before the show. That's unclear because the buyers get to decide whether they're V6 or EV. You were telling me though, from your conversation with Larry Dominique, that he said the majority of owners had selected majority combustion power, but
yes.
And whether that means 16 or I guess a majority would be 18.
He suggested a vast majority. So, take that as you will. Didn't give me any specific numbers, but he was also very clear to point out that owners at this point, they can still change their mind. If they want to go EV instead of combustion, they can. And he also highlighted, hey, that's why we offer this with both powertrains, because it signals where Alfa Romeo has been and it's a gateway to where Alfa Romeo is going. And that is electric.
Car. Watchers, I can see you there. No one has commented on their opinions on this car. Are Smith and I crazy that we think this thing is absolutely drop dead gorgeous? Or, never mind. Group FBC has an opinion. Majority, all 33, can't imagine buyers choosing the EV for the final ice fling like this.
Maybe? I mean, when you think about it that way, yes. But then you also think the majority of these are likely going to be electric or combustion. Maybe I have one of four or five or six or seven or whatever it ends up being. And you have,
and also you get an extra, on one side you have to last.
Oh, you get a lot of extra power too. A lot of extra power. Yeah. 620 to 750. You could think of it as the last internal combustion Alfa, or in this case, like the first EV Alfa Romeo supercar.
Supercar. Yeah.
Last and depending first on at the same time. I want to meet the person that buys two of them.
I hope there's someone that buys two of them. I want to see the guy check out here. You know, here's what, $5.3 million. I'll take two. It's like
here's my gas version. Now I want the electric version.
It's like that scene in Dumb and Dumber where they go to the black tie event and they're like, it's $500 a plate. And he gives them like $2,000, like, in case we want seconds.
Just in case I want some more. And yes, Group FBC is chiming in. Oh, and yes, it's a gorgeous thing. Can't go wrong when using the original 33 as a starting point. I would agree. And being just a poor automotive journalist that I am, I'm actually going to think twice about getting me an Alfa Romeo and Forza Horizon. I mean, okay, I'm sitting here looking at this car and it's like, well, I've passed up a lot of the Alphas just because, I mean, they're nice, but I've never been really a big Alfa guy. Now I'm picking a closer look.
If you've ever been to a vintage racing event, that Alfa twin cam four cylinder makes the most gorgeous. It is the best sounding four cylinder engine in the entire world. And
they do make some good sounds. They do make some good sounds. And I know there are some very, very pretty Alpha engines. I'm trying to think of the specific V6 that just looks fantastic.
With the that came out in the 80s with the it's the Busso V6, which is in like the GTV, and it's in like the 164 and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very pretty engine. Absolutely. Anyway, I think we've gushed enough about Alfa Romeo. Not that they don't deserve it, because you know they kind of. The other nice thing is, and I know this is something you and I've talked about, is there wasn't a whole lot of teaser campaign for this car. There was a teaser like a week before it debuted, maybe less than that. But it's not like we saw umpteen spy shots of, oh, Alpha's developing this or something. Mm-hmm. It snuck up on us in a certain way. And I really enjoy that, especially as, you know, as an automotive journalist where I'm writing about cars every day. To be surprised is fantastic, because I can't tell you how many stories I've written about the refreshed Porsche 911. I've seen, like, by the time it debuts, I'm going to be like, yeah, that's it. I've written thousands of words about that car. But
that's it. And we've kind of seen it too, right? They do a little bit of clever camouflage here and there. Well, it comes back, and we've said it many, many times on this program. Automakers can keep secrets if they want to. And exactly. I think, a lot of times when you see cars out in public, I mean, sure, they want to keep the details from prying eyes. But at the same time, they want the attention. They want people to know, hey, we're working on a new car and it's coming to you soon. So it's free, because you know what? We pick it up and our readers want to know about it. They read about it. Yeah. So
no, I'm not saying we shouldn't cover that stuff. It's just saying that for me, it's once it debuts, like the Porsche example, it's like, I know it's been coming. It's been coming forever. Whereas this, you get one teaser and then it arrives and it's like, oh, wow, that's really cool. So,
yeah, no, yeah. Very cool. Well, speaking of Porsche.
Vamp for me for just a second as I find my gallery. There we go.
We have the Porsche Cayenne Turbo E Hybrid, which, right. By the time you say that name, you'll probably be doing about 85, 90 miles per hour. Porsche Cayenne Turbo E Hybrid. Yeah, somewhere about there. That's because it has 729 horsepower. I believe this is the most powerful factory Porsche now. Am I correct on the boost? Outside of race cars.
Well, no, I was thinking, the range topping Taycan, doesn't it have a little more? I don't know.
If it does, it's close. Point being, this is a family SUV.
It's very powerful.
With 729 horsepower, that's the twin turbocharged 4-liter V8 that you know and love, making 591 horsepower. It's got a single electric motor in there, making 174 horsepower. You put it all together, you do some wizardry, you have 729 horsepower, 700 pound-feet of torque. It goes 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, which, as crazy as that sounds, I still think, and Bruce, you need to remind me this tomorrow because I keep saying this, I need to go in and update our fastest SUVs list. 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds puts this, I think, right at the very bottom of the fastest SUVs list. That's how crazy the world has become. Top speed of 183 miles per hour.
And we should say this replaces the Cayenne Turbo this is essentially a model refresh. We should say that this is the refresh Cayenne, and this variant, they're no longer going to have the Cayenne Turbo. Now, if you want a Cayenne Turbo, you get the Cayenne Turbo E Hybrid.
Mm-hmm. And it costs $148,550. It's pricey, but that's life in 2023. It's a luxury high performance SUV.
Exactly.
You're going to pay some money for it. And you'll pay a little bit more if you want the coupe version. That's $153,050. How do you say that? $153,050.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. I don't do numbers. I write.
You got it. And we should also say that, oh my God, what I was said just literally jumped out of my head, and I mid-sentence.
You were going to talk about the 12.6-inch driver's display or the 12.3-inch infotainment screen.
I realized
it. You weren't?
It has a 25.9 kilowatt-hour battery. We do not know how much range it has in terms of EV only. They have not announced that yet, but you can drive it purely as an EV for some distance. We just don't know what that distance is quite yet. And
you know what? I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
This is an SUV. Give it a little bit of obviously the hybrid is coming in as a performance boost.
Thank you,
but
FBC. I thought there was a Taycan that was more powerful, and I was pretty sure, and you've just said that I was right.
You have been vindicated.
Yep.
Group FBC, you're almost like the third co-host at this point.
Pretty much. If I'm ever sick, Group FBC gets to step in.
So somebody's getting the call.
Yep. We don't know the range, but 25.9 kilowatt-hour battery, that's going to provide some distance, certainly, of EV-only power. And it comes standard with an adaptive suspension, and it is a two-chamber, two-valve system, so it can adjust both the compression stroke and rebound stroke of the dampers for a fully adaptive setup when you're going over bumps or just on the road or whatever.
And they changed the face a little bit too.
Barely.
Bruce, you did a lot more research on this. I just did the Cliffs notes.
No. It's
been a busy day.
No, I understand. It barely looks different. But more of it is the tech. The fact that,
The tech,
the turbo model is gone. Now you get the turbo e-hybrid, 25.9 kilowatt-hour battery, standard adaptive suspension, all stuff like that. Also standard are deep breath HD matrix design LED headlights, which is essentially their adaptive headlights that can kind of turn off various bits and bobbles in order not to blind other drivers, which is a useful feature. It's a very nice, very expensive, very powerful SUV. That's kind of what it comes down to.
And can we take just a moment and appreciate how far the Cayenne has come since it first launched, 20 some years ago? I still remember when it launched and everybody
in 08.
Has it been crazy that long?
Well, you said 20 years. 20 years would be 03.
I thought it was 08. Okay. 15, 20. It all fades away after a while, Bruce. You'll get there, I promise.
okay.
But the point being, I remember when this first came out and people just being like, oh gosh, really? What kind of stupid idea is this going to be? And it's not Porsche.
They were
spot on. Think about how far ahead they were as opposed to, like Lamborghini or Aston Martin.
Smith,
they saw the writing on the wall.
You were right. It debuted in 2002. So it is 20 years old. I was wrong. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'll
nailed it.
I'll take that. Maybe the old noggin isn't so bad after all.
No, yeah, you were right. 2002. I was thinking it was later than that. Yeah.
Well, time flies, man. I remember when it first came out, and it looked kind of awkward. It looked kind of strange, and I just remember people saying that this isn't going to fly. This isn't going to work, you know. So meanwhile, our wonderful ramblers in the comment section, and again, if you're tuning in, you're listening live right now, whether you're Motor One on YouTube, Motor One.com on Facebook, Motor One.com on Twitter, you can comment. We'll see it right here. We love to interact and share. And Groove totally. FBC, you and Ted Adam Green are having a little discussion here. Ted Adam Green says, at what point is horsepower and 0 to 60 irrelevant? And then Groove FBC, I'd argue that 0 to 60 became irrelevant once 3 seconds or less became the norm, but then I can remember when 5.x seconds was damn quick.
It's still damn quick to me.
It's still damn quick.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're talking about numbers, in my mind, and I've said it before on here, when it comes to horsepower, really usable on the street that you can really just kind of sink your teeth into and not have to be overly cautious about throttling it or letting the traction control kick in, 5 to 550, and that really depends, too, on the vehicle. Sure. You start getting up to 600, 700, 800 horsepower, even with something supremely heavy, you plant your foot and you're either going to have to throttle it to keep from spinning into a crowd if you drive Mustangs, or you're going to let the traction control kick on and it's going to keep you restrained until you're at the speed limit. And if you want to go above the speed limit, you shouldn't go above the speed limit. You should take it to the track, in which case you can turn everything off. And I'm starting to sound like an old person now, but I mean, it's bragging rights, I think, at this point. 0-60 in 3 seconds. That depends a hell of a lot on just having tires and grip to use it. And in most cases, you're not going to have that capability on the street. You want to go to the track and have some fun? Sure, go for it. In my mind, if you have a car that's 0-60 in 5.5 seconds, that's still plenty quick and plenty fun.
Yeah, the number in my head was sub-6 is still plenty quick.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking sub-6 to start. But I you get used to that in a real hurry. Hurry. I mean, you'll get used to like 4, 4.5 seconds in a real hurry. But to go quicker than that, I mean, you generally have to be paying a lot more attention. You have to have a lot more skill, and you probably shouldn't be doing it on the road anyways. So,
totally
bragging rights. But you know
bragging what? Bragging rights are nothing, though. Bragging rights. If you need to brag about your car, there's something wrong. Bragging about bragging to other people, I think, is where the difference is. You can be proud of
your car. Like when you walk in and be like, yeah, beep beep, that's mine. And then like every 5 minutes you're like hitting the button so people turn around and see that you've got the Porsche sitting outside. Okay, yeah, that's
exactly
that's a little tacky. I maybe have sort of done that before, but I'm not going to do it again.
Good on ya.
Crickers.
Speaking of high horsepower machines, let's talk about a rumor we just got about the new Dodge Charger that we know that a new Dodge Charger is coming, but we were told it was only going to be an EV. You were told, in fact, it was only going to be an EV. And now we have some potentially other information.
Well, I'll take some ownership here because, yes, last year, before the Charger Daytona SRT concept was even revealed, we were hearing that, okay, you know, the next Charger, the Hemi's going away. Mm-hmm. Gasoline power altogether is going away. It's going to be electric only. There were some reports from other outlets. I'm not going to call anybody out. There were some reports from other outlets that were saying, hey, it's still going to have the gas engine. This is what we heard. I contacted Dodge directly. And usually you get a, we can't comment at this time. This time around, a spokesperson just told me flat out, is like, no, those reports are wrong. The Hemi is going away. Yeah, read the quote. Yes. Read the quote there.
The Hemi in that platform, as well as that platform, are going away. The next generation will be a BEV, a battery electric vehicle.
Yeah,
that full stop. So it was like dry.
That is cut and dry. And it's been over a year since then. The internal combustion rumors resurface every now and again. We've looked into it, and I've tried to kind of take a personal lead on that just because I had the experience, you know, working with Dodge. We've shied away from covering any of those rumors because, hey, we've got the actual story here from the source. This is it. So this one came out from Mopar Insiders, and they generally do pretty good when it comes to information and reports. And mm-hmm. they were citing just anonymous sources saying, okay, the Charger, the Daytona SRT is going to live alongside another Charger that's going to have internal combustion power. And the Charger Daytona SRT will be the your EV version or your high performance, where you'll get the Banshee, you know, that's that's supposed to just have gobs of power. So that sounded pretty interesting. And especially now, over a year later, when Dodge has had a chance to see how people are responding to the possibility of an electric future only for the Charger, when they've had the chance to see, okay, here's Ford with the new Mustang, not a teeny bit of electrification anywhere so far in the seventh gen Mustang. And in fact, here comes Ford with the GTD with over 800 horsepower, ready to set records or at least turn a quick time at the Nürburgring.
And also, if I might add, we ran a story over the weekend about Jim Fairley saying that no, basically saying, no, we're not going to do an electric Ford Mustang coupe quite yet.
That was another. Nah. Yeah, and that was another interesting take.
We got over 100 comments. I think right now it's sitting around 120 comments on that story, which is a massive number of comments. So,
and in that time, if you see the market, automakers from the more recent sales reports I've seen, they're struggling a little bit to sell EVs. There's been something of a pushback in Europe regarding the regulations that are coming down in Europe that have some automakers saying, you know, maybe we're not quite ready to go this far, this fast into EV. So long story short, a lot has happened since that report. And I reached out to Dodge again, to the same spokesperson that I was talking with. And I said, hey, we've got this new report. Is there any chance you can give me a comment on this? Or, and this is the important part, or can you still confirm what you said a year ago is correct? And there was, and the response was, don't have anything to share with you right now. Stay tuned. So they couldn't confirm the statement that they already gave me a year ago. And that was a little telling to me. And I thought, well, let's go ahead and run this story, because a lot has happened since then. A lot of things have changed. And as we've seen, we've had a lot of comments on this story too. And there are a lot of people that are saying, it makes sense to still have some sort of combustion powered charger to go along with something that might be a little bit different in design, that's fully electric. As far as the engine, probably an inline six. It's
allegedly, that's all
speculation. We've heard a lot of rumors on that. If you get the high performance, the high performance version of that inline six, the Hurricane i6, that's 500 horse. That's more than you get from a Scat Pack Charger right now. Obviously, it's not a Hellcat, but if Dodge were to spin this off as, okay, your super crazy powerful Charger is going to be the electric Daytona, or you can still have a combustion Charger, guys, 500 horsepower isn't anything to shake a stick at. That's still going to be quick. And something that I saw also in the comments that I hadn't really considered before. I mean, chargers are still used quite very widely by law enforcement.
Correct.
And offering a new combustion version might open that up to more law enforcement agencies. And that's something that I honestly hadn't considered before. So Motor One readers, Ramblers, I mean, they're the best people out there. It gave me something new to think about. And yeah, it's something we wanted to talk about here on the podcast, because obviously it's been a huge topic the last few days. The Motor One readers have responded, as we've said many times. We want to try to bring some of that into the podcast.
I had not thought about the law enforcement angle until you just brought it up. But yeah, that's interesting because
it's very interesting. You know,
the thing with police is the thing that is kind of preventing them from adopting EVs is that those vehicles idle a lot, whether it's, you know, highway patrol sitting along the side of the road waiting for someone to pass, whether it's surveillance, whether just whatever it is, those vehicles sit and idle a lot. And that's, you know, if you run down the battery from doing that, that's going to be a problem. Whereas combustion engine, you just, you know, fill it back up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is an angle I had not considered. And it's an interesting thought because Dodge, you know, Ford, Chevy, and Dodge all offer police vehicles. I rarely see the Chevys in my area, at least. I'm not saying they don't sell well. Just in my area.
I see Tahoes around here a lot. We see a lot of Tahoes in the area here. Yep.
For me, it's Explorers and Chargers.
Yep. I see Explorers. I see Chargers. And I think the state police, the Michigan State Police, are still using Tahoes quite a bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's just, you know, very state to state. Mm-hmm. I just don't see them. But yeah, that's clearly a very lucrative market. And to, you know, cut yourself off from that would, you know, be bad because, you know, the police aren't going anywhere. So being able to sell vehicles to them is kind of a, you know, a useful thing. Yeah. So yeah, that's really interesting.
It's interesting. And I mean, the spokesperson told me, stay tuned.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what that means. I replied saying, we're staying tuned. We're staying tuned. We've got the North American International Auto Show coming up in a couple of weeks, whether we could see something there. I mean, it's been over a year since the Daytona SRT. Has it been over? Yeah. It was July.
Just about a year.
Yeah. I think it was last July. Late in July, 2022, when we saw the Daytona SRT. So been a little over a year since then. And we know Charger and Challenger are done after this year. And Dodge is certainly, and justifiably so, focusing their attention on their last call models, giving the Hemi its send-off. So means something for Detroit? We'll have to see.
The Hemi is dead unless something miraculous, because I just wrote this up a story today about they're basically doing a last call version. It's called the final edition of the Ram TRX.
Yep.
They're making 4,000 of them because essentially for next year, like because of the emissions rules and stuff like that, they just kind of can't make the Hemi V8 anymore.
Of course, we've seen in spy photos. And you can go to MotorOne.com, my friends, and read about all of these things. We've seen plenty of spy photos of the facelifted, the new Ram facelifted pickup truck. It's just a mid-cycle thing. But our sources, our spy sources are saying, you know, we're fairly certain that these trucks have, at the very least, the inline six under the hood.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when you look on the spy photos, you'll see, you know, camouflage over the front end, but then on the Ram trucks where you'll see like badges on the hood or the fenders, denoting engines, those are covered up too on these. So just a little interesting bit of spy photo information when we get these things in, and we try to look them over. So yeah,
totally.
Lots happening. We know Stellantis is confirmed for having at least one significant debut at the Detroit Auto Show. And that's just in a couple weeks. So we'll see what's happening there.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the camper portion of our show. And we're going to start with a story that has done tremendous traffic for our site. And if it's done tremendous traffic for us, I think the Rambler should know about it. And that is the fascinating story of an Isuzu box truck. And literally, I'm going to put the photo here up. It looks like a moving van. Like
in a former life, I actually drove one of these for a very short time doing deliveries for a certain office supply company. Okay. And it was just two-wheel drive. And I'll be honest, it was kind of miserable because you're, well, on that particular truck, you're really more sitting in front of the engine. I think this is a little bit more over top. But this is actually a very posh custom camper inside. It's a 2007 Isuzu. And it was built up 4 years ago. We have a pretty good audience for camper, especially like, you know, custom build campers like this. And the whole point of this was to make it a stealth build. Why?
And they achieved that.
Oh, in spades. I mean, the outside, the paint is still kind of cracked up. There are no windows on the sides. However, and I think this is extraordinarily cool. It has the big roll up, lift gate at the back, like you would find on a regular work truck. But behind that, he installed two glorious full size, full width, full length glass doors. So when he gets to where he's going, he rolls that thing up and he has his two glass doors there for a beautiful view right straight out the back. It still has an electric powered loading ramp on the back. And he folds that down and that becomes a nice little porch right outside. It has a very sizable shower bathroom. This is a full-time on the road home. The gentleman that built this, him and his daughter are both adventure people, and he built it for both of them to go out and just enjoy life. They do a lot of skiing, so it's four season ready. If I remember correctly, it has two sizable beds in a bunk situation up front. And then there's just a futon right at the back. Like, I think he said it was like a Walmart futon that just folds right up for another bed. Group FBC, I'm glad you said this. Group FBC says, have they used a toolbox for kitchen storage? Yes, they have. He didn't want to put a specific, like a lot of times in these builds, you'll see an elevated bed at the back to make room for like an externally accessible garage, so-called garage where you could put your tools and all that. He didn't want that. If you can see, he's got bicycle storage on the walls. He has built-in ski storage on the walls. And yes, he repurposed a nice high-end toolbox that holds tools, as you would, but there's also plenty of room in there, so it holds kitchen utensils, and he has a nice cutting block on top of it. So, yeah, it's a nice toolbox that doubles for duty in the kitchen. And speaking of, I mean, it has a full kitchen. He's got a nice sink in there. I don't recall if he had details on his water supply, but it's got just a propane-powered stove. And this also, and I think this is really cool, we've seen this just a few times, it has a wood-burning stove in it.
It does.
It's just a small stove. He says that, you know, it doesn't put out a bunch of heat. It's not something that you'd want to rely on constantly. But, you put some logs in there, you burn for an hour or two, and it certainly puts out some heat. And on the outside, like I said, it's just a plain white wrapper, if you will. It's a plain white Subaru.
It's a box truck.
Sorry, Isuzu. I keep saying Subaru. It's an Isuzu box truck, but it's a four-wheel drive. Or actually, in this case, six-wheel drive, since it's got dualies on the back.
Yeah,
it's four-wheel drive. So this has a little bit of overlanding capability. He doesn't mention in this video specifically, like the powertrain, but I did a little bit of research. And
it's got to be the stock Isuzu.
I think this era of Isuzu had some affiliation with General Motors. Yes. And if that's a gasoline engine in there, I'm fairly certain that's a Chevy Vortec V8.
Oh, okay. So it'd be and you very tilt the easy cab forward. The
yeah, you tilt the cab forward, and you have full access to that engine. Yeah. This thing is. I remember what was like a year ago or so, we were talking about some of our favorite campers, and I mentioned the Sled Zeppelin, which was this crazy radical bus that was modified into this full-time motorhome that had like a garage for snowmobiles and all. I think this is my new favorite because it's legit stealth. It has good off-road capability, and it's nice. It's comfy inside. There's a lot of space. and being stealth, he makes a good point. There are a lot of places that frown upon motorhomes pulling in and parking, especially like in some resort towns, he was saying. Sure. With this, well, you're just the work guy showing up to take care of somebody's somebody's plumbing. You look like
you're delivering appliances, essentially.
Ted Adam Green has it right on the horn here. A sleeper. It is in fact a sleeper with accommodations. I mean, if you really wanted to be cozy, 1, 2, 3, 4 accommodations to sleep 6 people.
Yeah.
It's a
cool build. It did very good traffic for us, and you can kind of understand why. Because
go to motor1.com and read this.
Because these box trucks are inexpensive to buy. Like, you know, because they get used up by whatever company, and then...
Well, hold on, Bruce. Before you go too far, he's got $54,000 into this rig.
But that's nothing.
And 30, Smith, I 34... wrote a
$500,000 RV today.
Yeah, well, that was the trailer too, wasn't it? That's not even an RV. That was that trailer. Yeah. There, I mean, you can get very expensive in the motorhome world. But I mean, we've also seen builds for 1,050. I mean, it's still,
of course, there is a spectrum.
If I remember correctly, he paid $34,000 for the truck. And then he's put another $20,000 into the build to make it what it is there. $54,000.
That's reasonable as hell.
And it's a full-time home. And it's a tiny home, but it's not like the guy that you wrote about a few years ago living in his Nissan Versa or something.
Or the Camaro one that just made
the guy that lived full-time in his Camaro. It's like, okay, where do you draw the line between rough. I'm van lifing or I just have to live in my car?
I mean, it was an interesting build, but that one just like put my anxiety into overdrive because I imagined living in a Camaro and that's an apartment on wheels. This Isuzu, like
that's legit bigger than probably, my wife's dorm room.
I was just about to say, I think it is as big or maybe bigger than my dorm room in college.
Easily.
And I had a roommate
and her dorm didn't, I mean, she didn't have any sort of kitchen or anything in her. I mean, you don't usually have kitchens or anything in your dorm. So there's usually
a sink in ours, no kitchen.
Oh, I mean, bathroom. Yeah. But yeah, totally bigger. Totally bigger. Yep. How about something a little bit smaller, but a lot more expensive?
The Hummer.
The GMC Hummer EV Earth Cruiser. When I say more expensive, I should point out, I should point out that we don't know the price. Pricing wasn't mentioned on this.
Well, we know what a Hummer costs,
but we know what a GMC Hummer costs, and it's not $54,000, is it?
No, it's not.
This debuted for Overland Expo Mountain West, which was just running here just in the last few days. If you're familiar with some of the articles that we write at Motor One, Earth Cruiser, they're an upfit company. They do some pretty nice, luxurious upfits.
They're on the higher end of the market.
They
do very nice work, but they are on the higher end of the market.
And they took a crack at the GMC Hummer EV, and obviously it's the pickup truck version. They made a custom camper shell that fits on the back, because you're not going to go down to your local camper shop and just buy a camper that fits on the back of a GMC Hummer. And this has a pop top roof on it. So, I mean, it gives you a little bit of room to stretch out. There's a decent sized bed up there in the top. It gives you a small kitchen. There's a small shower in there. There's a little cassette toilet. We're told it's got 600.
The exterior is all carbon fiber.
Yep. So, I mean, it's still going to be heavy. I mean, it's going to be heavier than a regular GMC Hummer EV, but
it has to be.
I mean, it shouldn't add too much. We're saying this because we didn't get stats on the weight. Correct. But we do have stats on power. It's got 600 watt solar that Earth Cruiser says can power it off grid for 7 days. Obviously, that's going to depend on just how much power you are using. It carries 13.5 gallons of fresh water. It's got a 7 gallon gray water tank, which for those who aren't familiar, gray water is, you know, like you wash your hands and it goes down the sink. That's going to be your gray water tank.
Fresh water is fresh water. Gray water is what you put in the sink, washing your hands, washing dishes, stuff like that. And then black water is sewage.
Yeah. That's, yeah. We won't go any further on the black water. But yeah, we don't have any pressing on it.
Vulgar, but sewage.
Sewage.
That's what it is.
You can buy these upfits through Earth Cruiser, but we don't have any information on pricing. I mean, this just came out here. It was teased a little bit. I mean, it's cool. It's cool because I think anything with a pop top roof is cool. I'll be honest. You put a pop top
interesting. Roof I don't on a know
Reliant how Robin, cool and I'll be like, that's the coolest Reliant Robin I've ever seen.
It's fine. It's an interesting solution. I don't love it, but since we're on this kind of camper segment of the show, it was worth mentioning. But
for sure.
I don't love it, but it's interesting that they decided to build this because it's a neat solution to, you know, the Hummer EV is already an interesting vehicle, and then making a camper topper basically for it kind of adds even more interest. In terms of functionality, it seems like they're kind of packing a whole lot into a small space, and I wonder how functional that actually is. But yeah,
I mean that's my take too. We see plenty of upfits done to pickup trucks, wide cab pickup trucks. Industry. But you're talking usually a minimum of a 6.5 foot bed. A lot of times we'll see it done on like the big 2500 and 3500, you know, 3/4-1 ton rigs. With an 8 foot bed where you have a lot of space back there to use with then, you know, a big cab over section over top. I mean, these are properly monstrous rigs, not that a GMC Hummer EV is small, but sure. You do still have a fairly small bed back there. That's gonna, it's basically serving as your primary living space.
Right.
So, I mean, it's impressive that they have a kitchen in there and they have a little shower set up. That you can jump in there and use. I mean, obviously, this isn't a full-time home by any means.
No.
It would be. I think it would be a cool, like, you know, a cool weekender. Jump in, get away, climb up into the mountains for a bit. I don't know. I don't think Earth Cruiser clarified if their power ties into the GMC Hummer EV's power. I don't know.
I don't know if those two are tied either.
Yeah, I don't know if those two are tied together. I mean, electric vehicles certainly open another realm of possibility for the motorhome van life segment, because obviously, I mean, you're rolling around on big batteries, so there's extra power there. You'll have other means of generating power, like in this case with the solar. But yeah, they weren't totally clear on that, but an interesting RV. Off-roading, overlanding vehicle.
Yeah.
We'll see how many of they sell.
Sure. Totally. Do we want to, how many more RVs do we want to do before we get to the cheap challenge? I've got three lined up here. Do we want to do all three or?
I think we should talk about the Winnebago because that's kind of a big deal.
I've got it pulled up right here then.
That's kind of a big deal. This news just broke, I think, yesterday. Winnebago, obviously, I think just about everybody knows Winnebago. They have a new
segment.
Yep. They have a new trailer called the Winnebago Access. It's a new line of trailers. And it's their cheapest travel trailer. And I don't mean cheapest in terms of just, you know, poor build quality. They're going for the lower price point, and they're starting this at $29,600. And I think they've succeeded in capturing the attention of potential RVers because, I mean, we've had a lot of traffic on this on MotorOne.com. There are still a lot of details that they haven't shared, but this isn't a tiny trailer.
It can sleep up to eight people.
It can sleep up to eight people. And what's interesting,
your family plus your friends.
Yeah. When you look at Winnebago's current lineup for travel trailers, we've covered the Winnebago Hike, which is a really small, neat overlanding trailer, you know, a little more capable off-road. And I think that starts somewhere around $40,000 or so. And it's like half the size of this. The next from the Access, I think the next least expensive trailer is like 38 or 39, somewhere in that range. So, I mean, this is a pretty big deal here. They have four models that they list on their website. And I'm trying to bring up that information here right now. There's the 25.
Quick, you're doing that.
Yep.
Oh, I was just going to say, this photo is hilarious to me because, so it's got bunk beds, as you can see, and it's got a full height window, but that person sleeping on top, you better not have like nightmares or night terrors or anything like that.
There's not much room. If you get up in a hurry,
you're hitting your head against the ceiling.
There's not much room, but hey, that's the price you pay. Living in close quarters. But yeah, they advertise four different styles. There's the 25ml and the 30BH, the 28FK, and the 26BH. I would love to give you stats on all of those, but Winnebago doesn't have stats yet. I can tell you the 25ml and the 30BH, I think, are going to be the higher end models. Sure. They feature large slide outs on the left side that actually create space for a nice little movie area. And they advertise either a regular sofa or like a theater style sofa seat. You have the 26BH you have the 28FK that also has a slide out on the side, but it's a little bit smaller, still has enough space for a movie room. The fourth model, the 26BH, I believe is going to be the entry level that starts at the $29,000 price point here. It doesn't have any slide outs on it, but it does have provisions for an external kitchen, which is kind of a big deal. And I mean, this is a legit travel trailer. There's a large queen size bed up front. The sofa folds out into a bed. You can convert the dinette area to a bed. There are the bunk beds. It's worth pointing out the bunk beds aren't offered on all of the trim levels, but they are offered on that base. And sure. Winnebago was keen to say, hey, at this price point, you can sleep up to 8 people. Also standard at that price point, electric tongue and electric stabilization jacks, water tank pad heaters, 2-inch accessory receiver hitch, built-in Wi-Fi. It has an enclosed underside that's also heated. That helps keep things protected underneath. It helps keep pipes warm. So it's a four-season thing. And Winnebago is a little cheeky here. They say it's a first-of-its-kind arrow-shaped front.
I don't know. Okay.
How many camper trailers do you see with a rounded front? But I'm sure they do something a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, that's Winnebago says that kind of equipment you just don't find in other trailers at this price point.
No, I bet you don't. At this price point, that's pretty novel. All of those features, you know, the fact that it can sleep up to 8 people for, you know, just shy of $30,000, if you're looking for something like it, it's a big trailer that you could.
Yeah. It's not a fifth wheel. It's not a fifth wheel trailer. It's something that you wouldn't hook up to like your Kia Soul.
You wouldn't hook it up to
the Kia Soul. The Kia Soul would probably fit in the front half of this trailer. So, I mean, it's a sizable trailer and it looks, I mean, from the photos we've seen, it looks really nice inside. There are different bathroom layouts, but all of them have a decent sized bathroom. They all have a decent sized kitchen. I don't know enough about the various RV trailers and their construction to understand if they might be, you know, less insulation here or different materials there. But we're used to seeing new Winnebagos not at $29,000. And
no.
This is going to be on sale. I better double check my dates on that because they sent me an update saying, yeah, we made a mistake. We were a year off. I think it goes on sale. Yes. This November. Initially they said it goes on sale next November. It's like, okay, well, you're giving yourself a year to prep. No, it goes on sale this November. And I believe you can see it in person if you are in the United States. at the big RV show in Hershey, Pennsylvania next month.
Oh, yeah.
And while you're in Hershey, Pennsylvania, you go to the Hershey factory and get yourself some chocolate.
Sure. Smith, I think just because of the time and also the other two campers we were going to talk about are both European only models. I think if it's okay with you, we should transition to our cheap camper challenge. Would that be acceptable to you?
Let's jump to the cheap camper challenge. Oh, we can just do a quick sum up. Of course, there was Caravan Salon 2023 that just went on. There were a few debuts there. The California T7 concept pop top camper. The Ford. What was it again, Bruce? The Ford.
It's the custom nugget,
which I think it should be called the Grand Nugget, just because the 10-year-old in me thinks that's hilarious.
Those were
the two big ones. I think Mercedes had their Marco Polo pop up van there. Pop up campers were big over at Caravan Salon.
Yeah, of their smaller model, which
yep.
It's the V class
Marco Polo.
Yeah.
The Volkswagen, the Multivan T7, that's kind of a big deal because they add a sliding door on the left side of the van. So now it has dual sliding doors, but you still have the kitchen along that side with that sliding door in place. It gives you a little bit more, ingress egress capability, but it also means that kitchen is accessible from the outside if you want to. So, I mean, it's just some pretty cool things going on over there.
And here's the custom nugget from Ford. But again, pop top van,
pop top, popular. I love them. Like I said, put a pop top on anything, man.
Pretty much.
The show in the shop is rusty. Maybe I should do a pop top show.
All right. Group FBC though says, bring on the cheap campers.
Bring on the cheap campers.
No, I am going to win this one. I found the most amazing camper in the world.
Okay. Why don't you go first?
Are we starting with me? Okay.
Hold on. Give the criteria.
Sure. It could be a motorhome. It could be an RV. It could be a camping trailer. The only rule is that it must be $10,000 or less. That is the rule we gave ourselves. And then generally, it should be roughly close to where we live. It has to be within a normal driving distance. Group FBC, it kind of does have stripes. Okay.
They're painted.
I know. The only downside of this is that I would need a CDL, but I found someone converted in Parma, which is not too far from where my parents live, a Volvo semi truck into an RV, and it's got towing capability behind it, so you could tow whatever you wanted. $6,500.
Bruce, we need to email that guy and write that up, because that's really cool.
But no, wait, you haven't seen the inside yet.
Wait, well, okay. Was that a deck on the back?
No, so that's where you tow from. So it's got a little, I guess it actually doubles as a deck. Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's
if you're not towing. Okay.
Yeah, if you're not towing, it could be a deck. But let me get to the interior. So here's all of the cab stuff, which it looks crappy, but okay. But then you step inside. So you got a refrigerator, you've got a sink and a microwave. You got a little dinette area, seating, obviously. It's got a shower. And it's, other than needing a CDL to drive it, this thing is perfect.
Does it have a trailer that it comes with? Or is it just set up so you can pull one if you want? Because I've seen rigs like this before where, you have the truck that's done up as a camper with its own little custom camper trailer for extra space.
It does not come with a trailer. It is set up to pull a gooseneck bumper or pinto hitch. It's a Volvo semi diesel straight six turbo 5-speed manual built 9 years ago. Full shower and toilet, sink for a kitchen, fridge, microwave, TV, 80 gallon water tank, propane heater.
It does say no special license required.
I don't know about that. I don't know that I trust.
You want to double check and make sure.
Yeah.
But you know, that would be a great race rig, you know, for like a smaller race team pulling your race car. Or if you're like just a hardcore guy that likes to go snowmobiling or dirt bikes or four wheelers. And you just go out for, you know, a weekend or a week. You don't stay at a hotel. You just park it right there at the trailhead. You stay there. Yeah. That's a cool rig. And a $6,500. That's pretty cool.
Well under our price range. You could invest, you know, the rest of the money and, you know, touch up a few of the cab looks like it might need a little bit of clean up and stuff like that, but that doesn't scare me, you know?
Yeah.
And something like this, it's literally made to go on the road. It's a semi. It's like, it's just going to eat up miles and you're just going to have, you know, find someone to repair it every once in a while. It's got a little bit of rust, but nothing I would be afraid of. Like, it's a cool rig. And you got a CB, you can do breaker 1.9.
You put a CB in anything. I got a CB sitting here in the house somewhere.
Well, this one already has it though. Okay.
Already installed. It looks like a cool home away from home.
It does. And so I will say I have some other options. I didn't pick just one, but that was my favorite because it's a really cool, it's clearly custom built. It's not like Volvo sold this, you know, someone did all of this work. And if that's what you needed, and you're absolutely right with the, you know, the gooseneck and stuff on the back, you could tow damn near anything. You know, you could tow a racing trailer, you could tow snowmobiles or a boat or anything.
Yeah, definitely a neat home away from home. You'll have to queue up some of your extras because I have a couple here that I need to present. One of which, I mean, you can have your home away from home or you can just have your home. I found a one bed, one bath house built on a trailer. It's built on a car, just a regular double axle car trailer. And it's just a house. Man. You want to know where it's at, Bruce?
Tell me. Oh, I see it. It's Ross Common. That's in your town.
Probably like 5 miles away from me. So for once, I found something right nearby. $6,750.
It's just a house.
It's just a house. Well, it's like half a house. And to be fair, it's unfurnished and it's not finished yet. Tiny home shell on wheels, 18x8 car hauler frame, exterior almost done, composite door, new vinyl windows, metal roof. Disregard the photos with the temporary roof and the 2x4s replaced with 2x6s. 95% complete, new vinyl siding, needs your interior design. To be fair, I'm fairly certain this isn't meant to be like a towable camper trailer. I'm pretty sure it's just a house on wheels. I don't know
like
how.
If it's a house on wheels, then it's towable. Like, definition.
Okay, you tow it at 20 miles an hour from where it's being built to where you're going to live. As opposed to,
yes,
let's go out to Yellowstone. I mean, how is this going to stand up to like 70 mile an hour winds on the road? I don't know. But I mean, it's a house. It's got a house door. It has studs. It's got regular walls on the outside, vinyl siding. It's a house. And if you don't like it, you tear it down and you have a nice car trailer.
And I thought it's $6,500. Is that right?
$6,500, which honestly, a good car trailer is probably going to run you about $5,000 or so.
Exactly.
A nice double axle car trailer. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like there's any electrical installed in it yet. I mean, it looks like it just has the walls and the windows in place and the roof in place. Unlike the Winnebago, it does not have a one of a kind custom front aero clip.
No,
it just has a wall. But yeah, that was the first thing I found that made me think
I am not a hunter, but I know of hunters, and that would be a great little rig that, you know, it's deer season or whatever, you park it along wherever, you know, you can legally, and, you know, you go out hunting and early in the morning or late at night, you know, when the deer are out, you chill out there during the day. That's a cool little rig. Bravo. I got no fight on that.
Yeah, I just, like I said, though, I don't think it's really designed to take the family, you know, 2,000 miles out west to see the Redwoods.
No, I wouldn't want to. No, exactly.
Yes. So that, I saw that right off the bat. I was like, okay, that's neat, but I don't know if we're supposed to look at trailers or motorhomes. Nope. So I found something 3 hours away.
Okay.
Or no, not 3 hours away. It's only just like an hour or so away. And I really love it. It's a 1986 Toyota camper.
Ooh. Oh, that's cool as hell.
You don't see them very often. No. As I was looking around here, apparently I live in just like camper central, because I have free reign of camper trailers that look halfway decent for $5,000 or less. So I was taking a little bit of time to see what I could find for motorhomes. And yeah, this 86 Toyota popped up. It's in Central Lake, which is about an hour, maybe an hour and a half northwest of me. And it looks pretty decent. It's got a little bit of rust. It's a 22-foot motorhome. It's the four-cylinder, four-speed manual transmission. I can row my own.
Is that the famous 22RE engine that, you know, lasts forever? Like,
it says it's the 22. It says it's the 22R with a four-speed manual. Lots of new parts. Easy to get around. Easy to park. One-ton dual rear end.
It's going to be slow as molasses in January, yep. But it'll never break.
Took it on trade. Really don't have a need for it. Willing to consider a trade for something of equal value. And they're asking $9,500.
Okay.
It's showing, what is it? Showing 108,000 miles on the odometer. And Bruce, it's got a CB in it, buddy.
Great. I got a bear in the air.
Come at me, son. But I mean, it's got the cab over bed, little bathroom in it. I mean, it's a little motorhome.
Wet bath. Totally.
Nice little kitchen. It, like
looks
I said,
like the flooring and the cabinets have been updated, because that wouldn't have been original.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look bad at all. I love the bungee cord that holds the red microwave in place. That's a custom touch right there.
Hey,
for just a fun little getaway under 95 or under 10 grand, $9,500. I do see some rust there on the front fenders.
That's so little. I wouldn't be afraid of that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So man, once I saw that, I was like,
slow though.
It is going to be, it's going to be just totally slow. It's like 0 to 60. No,
maybe 0 to 60. Maybe
it's like the only thing you're going to win. You know, the only thing you're going to beat if you pull up to the stoplight is like the dude in the VW bus.
Yeah. That's the drag race to watch, this versus an original VW bus. Cause both of them are, that's going to be a pretty slow guy. Okay.
And, my second dude, pick. That Toyota painted stripes. The stripes are painted.
I'll never live that down. I still feel the same way. I'll never live that down. Okay.
It's good.
My second pick, I found a Dodge 3500 camper van for $6,500. The exterior is not great. And when I show you the interior, also not the best.
Does it come with free candy?
You're going to say that. Odometer claims 143,796 miles. It's got this weird pattern on the roof, and then
is that a pattern, or did like crap just come off the roof? I can't really tell.
It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I also don't know, because some people use like mason jars as like lighting. These are just stuck there.
So oh God, that exactly is a design, sure I think.
What they are functioning as, but they're there. But it's clearly a custom build. It's got you know, all of these wood cabinets. It's got, I have no idea what that is, and I don't think I want to know. It's got a bed, it's got a small kitchenette in it, you know. It checks all of the boxes for what we were asking for. This is one of the first ones I found. And then I found the Volvo, and I knew I had to pick the Volvo.
Yeah.
This one is just kind of scary. If I'm not being honest, I wouldn't want to be in this with a black light, let's say. I think some things might show up.
But just imagine what you would find in the walls if you took some of the walls apart. Am I the only one thinking illegal substances with this one? How about
But what I like about it is that it was clearly built by the owner, and they seem to have done a good job with that. The cabinets look good. Yep. You know, they did a good job with what they had. It's just the rest of it is creepy as all hell.
Well, and really, that's a good van too. Here. It looks like it has an air conditioning unit on the roof. Is that what I'm seeing there on the outside? That's not your average conversion van from the 1980s or 1990s in this case. I've looked at a few of those because I've been really tempted from time to time. I don't necessarily need any big camper, but a little something to just go for the weekend and just instead of pitching a tent, just hang out in the van. That with the big raised roof on it and that looks like an air conditioning unit up on top. If it still works, just power wash it and go.
And again, it's $6,500. We had a price range.
Yep.
It's well under that. If this is something you wanted, you could, throw in the rest of your 10 grand and, make it a little nicer. But the cabinets and stuff is what got me. The fact that, they are clearly made by the builder. It's again, it's creepy as all hell. I still, and I've said this twice now, don't know what the hell I'm looking at here, but checks all the boxes.
I don't know. Maybe that's where the crematorium was.
It looks like it's supposed to be a fireplace. Obviously it's not, but it looks like it's supposed to be a fireplace. But
you never know. Run a Carfax on it. Oh, that came up. That vehicle came up missing 15 years ago.
Exactly. but a cool rig though. Both of yours are cool. I still think my Volvo wins it.
Yep. You win with a Volvo.
That, I think despite what the listing says, I think you would need a CDL, but that's a minor thing. It's such a cool rig. The fact you could tow stuff with it, you could stay inside of it. Again, you couldn't live inside it, but for, like you said, towing snowmobiles, towing race cars, stuff like that.
Ideal.
For a weekend, it would be totally fine.
And I would bet good money that at one point, or maybe that was the reason for its build. Cause it looks like it's a rig ready to, cause I've seen a lot of these rigs like that where there's just smaller racing teams. You go to the track, you run, you stay right there at the track. You're good to go. Ramblers, I think that's you got some cheap campers out there. Send us some cheap champers. How about some cheap campers, everybody? Is it getting a little late here? Email us podcast@motorone.com.
Smith has been working hard today. It was like we said, DM'd him this morning, things were quiet. And then basically, as soon as he got on, car news exploded. And so he's had a busy day, folks. So,
I love being here. I love wrapping up the day, although I'm going to go and do some more work after
we're
done.
FEC has a question for you about a model. Do you have a Mark I MR2 on your right? What is that?
That is a Mark I MR2.
Well, turn around and pick it up. That is
one of the recently reclaimed, was sitting in the junk pile models that I put back together.
Yep. Ooh.
I'll be honest.
Oh, is that one that your father-in-law built?
No. This is one I think I built, but I have no memory of ever building it.
It's a good build.
It's all right. I'm still missing a mirror on this side, but check it out. It's a JDM because it's right-hand drive.
Yeah. Very nice.
So, yeah. I tried a little Easter egg. I think Group FBC has caught on. Every podcast, I usually have something a little different sitting back there because I have, I think at this point, probably around 150 or 200 built models in my house with another 100 at least in boxes. And I might have some news to share in the coming months on some plans that I have for some of these models that, that could be kind of fun.
That in our chat, I won't say what you're thinking, but yeah, Smith might have some stuff coming up about that. And I, so Group FTC, oh man, I regret selling mine. They're a cool car. They really are. Unfortunately, these days, the prices have just skyrocketed. Like you can, I remember when I was, you know, a teenager, you could get them for $5,000-$6,000. Now you're high teens is kind of what I've been seeing. $18,000-$19,000.
Yep.
80s cars, man. Add
now is even now is the time. It. We're starting to see them go way up. I mean, we just had the 280 ZX that sold at auction for $231,000. Granted, it was an extremely rare 280 ZX. I think
and one had of incredibly low miles, but
incredibly still. Low miles. I mean, all original. One of I think 500 in that color scheme. Yeah. But yeah, 231,000. They're going up. It makes me think, oh, maybe I should go get that kind of junky 280Z that's nearby. But that would require building another garage, and that ain't happening anytime soon.
Real quick, while we have just a second, Group FBC, I've got a question for you. Is this also true in Australia that 80s cars are kind of going up in value? Because obviously Smith and I are both in the United States. Yep. We write about U.S. auto news. So I do not have my finger on the pulse of the Australian used car industry, you know, economics. But
they are definitely on the rise here. Even before that 280 ZX was kind of like a wake up call to me. Bruce, I mean, what was the last time we did an 80s cheap car challenge? We were like, this used to be pretty easy finding a cool car for like $5,000. And
yeah, and now
I mean, it's not the case. I mean, it's still not quite as crazy as some, but others. Yep. Group FPC says, the 80s Japanese sports cars taken off here too. You know, it's an age thing. We saw the same thing with the classic muscle car era from the 60s and 70s when they shot up. Has that demographic got to a certain age and they wanted to relive some of their youth? We're seeing that a lot now with the 80s people.
Well, we were just talking about
I'm one of them
with Seth, where that what was it, Crown Victoria wagon sold, forget if it was Cars and Bids or Bring a Trailer, but it sold for like $9,000, and he was shocked. He's like, this is like a $500 car. I'm like, no dude, it's not. They're, like it was, yeah, it's not anymore.
It was never meant to be an enthusiast car, and I don't think it's, I mean, it's still not an enthusiast car.
No,
but there is a following for those big chunky wagons. And that's really what it is. If that was the same Crown Victoria just as a sedan, yeah, it wouldn't have been anywhere near that much. But that was a big chunky, and I think 91 was the last year. Yeah. Cause 92, they went to the rounded Crown Victoria with the 4.6. So that 91 was the last year for the 5 liter, the old 5 liter V8 in the big chunky squared off Crown Vic body. And I think it had the wood sides, you know, the fake wood sides and everything.
That one that sold did. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, maybe I'll still find that Cressida wagon hiding somewhere that I can have before those prices explode. But
good stuff, man. Good show.
I think we're gonna finish up for tonight. Again, as always, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, depending on where you're listening to us. We love having you guys as listeners. We love looking at seeing your comments in chat. It's just fantastic, you know, because as I say every week, you could be doing anything else and you decide to spend it with us, and that makes me feel special, and it makes me feel really, really good. And so I hope Smith and I are entertaining to you guys. We love doing the show. I legit
love doing the show.
I love doing the show. So thank you so much. But with that, we are out, and we'll see you next Wednesday. So bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.